You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the Dressage Today podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Purina. Good morning, Aviva. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm good. I'm still in the running with my hair on fire phase of life. I keep wondering when that's going to stop. And I'm coming to the realization it may just be when I'm dead. And that's okay, because that'll be a nice long sleep.
Well, you have been traveling a lot and had a lot of new things on your plate.
Yeah, I was back in Colorado this month. Really lovely group of people to work with. And I actually got to see a little bit of Durango. I got there in enough time to have some daylight. And I am flying out tomorrow to go to Bozeman, which is just, again, a super group of people. Really excited to go back and see them. And then the first weekend of May, I am hosting Mark Langley, who's a natural horsemanship guy coming from Australia. It'll be the second year I've hosted him here. So I'm really excited about all the different people that are coming in. We've got dressage people and trail riding people and backyard people. And it's just, I think it's going to be a really exciting event. So that's me in an acorn shell.
And a lot to organize for you too.
Big events cause you to get big projects done. So that is always a good thing.
Well, there you go.
Get those projects checked off the list. Yeah. So what's going on with you? How have things been up in Maryland?
Well, I actually have some news for our listeners who have been following my journey with Ralphie.
Okay.
And I have made the very, very difficult decision that I need to find Ralphie a new home. And it's
tell me about that.
It's through no fault of his. You know, he is just a super horse. He is engaging and sweet and smart and loves to work and loves being challenged. And he's a nice mover and he learns quickly. And you know what? He is so bored at my farm. And I've realized that a lot of the, you know, quote, behavioral issues that I've been having with him are just him trying to express his energy and do something more interesting. You know, he's out in a field with my 22-year-old metabolic gelding.
How old is Ralphie?
He's 8. And, you know, Freddie's 22. And Ralphie wants to play, and Freddie doesn't want to play. And Ralphie wants to work 5 or 6 days a week. And I can't always ride 5 to 6 days a week with my judging and my clinic schedule. And Ralphie likes being challenged and doing different things. And I'm a dressage rider, and I don't really cross train. And I don't have the time to do some of the things. So because we have to do what's right for our horses, I made the decision that I am going to sell him. And I reached out to some folks that I know in West Virginia. The farm is called Thanks a Lot Farm, and it's Alyssa and Katrina Schmidt.
What a great name.
Isn't that great? It's actually, Thanks is the first initial of everybody in their family. So there's meaning behind it as well.
Even more cool.
But they're lovely. I had the wonderful opportunity to judge Alyssa a few years ago, and she was just such a beautiful and correct rider. She really impressed me. And then one of my students bought a horse from them, and I thought it was a very inappropriate horse. And they spent a lot of time making sure that it was going to work out. You know, they didn't just have my friend, you know, come in and ride the horse and say, sure, you can buy him, bye. You know, they went through a lot, and it has actually turned out to be a very, very good placement. This is an ex bronc bucking horse.
Really?
And, you know, I just didn't think this was a great idea. And my student has taken her time and she's trail riding him, she's jumping him, and she's doing a little bit of ring work and some basic dressage work. And the horse is just going great. She's taken her time. She's given him confidence. I mean, it's just been, it's been wonderful. And Thanks a Lot was, you know, really concerned that he go to the right place and that, you know, he not be further traumatized or anything else. So I was quite impressed with that. So I spent a lot of time emailing them and texting them and calling them. And they are comfortable with everything that I told them about Ralphie. And I brought him out there. And from the minute he unloaded off the trailer, you could see that it was a good thing. They have free range sheep, and he thought that was very exciting. Yeah, he thought that was very exciting, but, you know, not exciting, scary.
Exciting, like, let's go chase the poof balls.
Well, let's see what they are. This is fun. You know, he's going to, he's out with a bunch of other horses, and they run and they play, and they're like on, in a 10 acre field. And they've started doing a little bit of jumping with him. And, you know, he doesn't quite understand how, but he thinks it's really cool. And, you know, he's just blossoming there. And it was absolutely the right decision. And now somebody just needs to go and ride him and fall in love with him and bring him home. I'm not asking a lot of money for him because a good home is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. Because he deserves it. So I'm very excited. I'm sad.
Yeah.
But I know that this is a decision that a lot of our listeners go through. You know, sometimes we buy horses and they're just, for whatever reason, they're not the right match. You know, sometimes the horse is too hot. Sometimes the horse is too dull. I had a horse that I bought that I wanted to be a dressage horse and he wanted to be a hunter. You know, it's, I think that no matter how much we love them and no matter how much they can do what we want them to do, it's incumbent upon us to find them what they really want to do. And Ralphie does not want to be the dressage horse of an aging,
quiet farm. Yeah.
Yeah, he wants to be, you know, he wants to be where things are busy. He wants to be where things are changing. He wants to, you know, today go on a trail ride and tomorrow, you know, play with Cavalletti and the next day do some dressage work and the next day, you know, jump cross country. So I, you know, Katrina and Alyssa can do that for him and hopefully they will find the right owner for him who also wants to do that with him. Because he's a neat horse and he deserves it. So that's where it is. So it's very sad.
Yeah, I understand that. I commiserate with you. It has been great following your journey with him. And I agree with you completely that it's good for people to understand. It's good for our listeners to understand that this does happen. And it's not wrong to help them find the right person for them.
Right.
You know, I don't think it occurs to people, but riders that are at the top of our sport, most of them have a type of horse they like to ride. Whether it's, you know, they like to ride big chunky horses or they like to ride really hot horses. But even at that level, people have, you know, it's like being attracted to your husband. It doesn't matter if anybody else is attracted to your husband, you are. And so it's okay to recognize that you and a specific horse are not the right pairing.
Yep. No, it's very true. I mean, there's nothing that Ralphie does that I can't ride. There's nothing about him that's wrong. I just know he's not as happy as he could be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not as happy as I could be either. And so we need to make both of us more happy.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that buying him was the right decision. And I think that keeping him and working with him for the year that I've had him was the right decision. And I think it gave him something that he needed at the time. But just as our children grow and, you know, go off to high school and to college and whatever, sometimes our horses grow and move on to other things as well. So, you know, there's no shame. There's just, you know, it's difficult because you love your horse and you want to be your horse's person. And I think I am Ralphie's person, but I think there's a better person out there for him who will also love him and who will meet the needs that he has now in ways that I can't.
Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, we're hardwired, or, you know, society pushes us to, you know, okay, I bought this horse and now I have to do it. And, you know, sometimes that's just not right. And sometimes you owe it to your horses to find what's right. I've known quite a few upper level dressage riders who were brilliant trainers who have gotten horses and have sold them and said, you know, they don't want to be a dressage horse. They, you know, this horse wants to event. This horse wants to be a hunter. You know, we have things that we prefer to do, but horses have things that they prefer to do also.
Absolutely.
And not every horse can be a dressage horse. Not every horse can be an event horse. Not every horse can be a trail horse. So yes, finding a horse, the home to do the things that they want to do, I think is really important. So, yeah. So if there's anybody out there who's looking for a really cool horse.
And cute, too. He's super cute.
Absolutely. Oh, he's absolutely adorable. I mean, he is just the cutest thing ever. I mean, I unloaded him off the trailer and Katrina was like, oh, my God, he's precious. He's an engaging little horse. He's cute and he's fun to ride. So I'll keep you guys posted on how things go.
Yes.
But I'm excited for him to go on a new journey and to find the right place.
Thank you for sharing this with us and being transparent about it, because I do think it's good for people to know that this happens.
Yeah.
Well,
on a lighter note,
let's talk about some L questions.
Okay.
This month's question comes from Ashley. I like this question a lot. Ashley says, I feel like I've gotten a different answer every time I've asked someone this. When crossing a diagonal in rising trot, when or and where should the rider change the diagonal they are rising with?
Well, you know what, Ashley? I'm going to give you a bunch of different answers. That's so funny. So, you know, the rule of thumb is that you change your posting diagonal at X. However, if you change your posting diagonal at X and you throw your horse slightly off balance, you really haven't done your horse any favors. If you are rising and you're doing a lengthening and you change your posting diagonal over X, you definitely impact the horse's ability to give you the lengthening. So my personal opinion, and I will tell you that in the L program, there was controversy with different instructors as well. And some of them said they should change at X. I think most people agree that the best place to change your posting diagonal is just before you hit the letter all the way across the diagonal. It signals for your horse that you are coming to the end of the diagonal. So if you're doing a lengthening, it signals to your horse to come back. If you're just doing a working trot, it signals to your horse that you are changing the balance and the bend. So I do not mark riders off for diagonals ever. I will comment, particularly at intro, if a rider is rising to the outside as opposed to the inside, if the rider's on the wrong diagonal, posting diagonal on a circle, I will sometimes and lacks bend. I will sometimes comment in my you know, remarks, posting on the correct diagonal might help with bend, because you can use your inside hip to push out to the outside ear, which can help you create the bend with the horse.
Okay.
But other than that, I don't really care what diagonal people are posting on, but I do see a lot of people who change their posting diagonal at X because, you know, they think they should. And I see the horse stumble is too strong a word, but the balance is impacted slightly. So not really helping you, Ashley. I'm sorry.
Well, no, but you're giving different reasons for why different things would, why you might think differently in different situations.
Yeah. I mean, when I'm teaching, I tell my students to change their posting diagonal just as they approach the letter across the diagonal.
Okay.
There are some instructors that tell their students to change the posting diagonal as soon as they start across the diagonal, because then it's sort of a seamless, you know, preparing to be going in the new direction. What I find is when riders do that, they screw up the bend coming through the corner. So that's not something that I really
The old like. Corner or the new corner?
The old corner.
The okay.
Old corner. Okay. So if you're going, you know, starting at K going across the diagonal, you know, if you change your posting diagonal as soon as you pass K and are, you know, starting across the diagonal, the chances are your horse is going to lose that supple right bend because mm-hmm. you've just changed the posting diagonal. But if you go all the way across the diagonal and, you know, now you're on the other side and you change your posting diagonal, you're alerting your horse that you're changing bend. So my answer, honestly, is wait until you're across the diagonal.
From a judge's standpoint.
Yeah, but that isn't necessarily the correct answer.
Okay.
I know very few judges that will make a comment if the rider waits all the way across the diagonal. I know there are judges who will comment if the rider changes the posting diagonal at X, slight loss of balance at X, slight loss of rhythm, you know, whatever.
Well, especially if they were in a lengthening.
Yeah. So, you know, the goal is to make it as easy as possible for the horse to do the job and to explain to the horse what it is that you expect of them. Mm-hmm. So, to me, waiting until you're across the, you know, almost across the diagonal makes the most sense to the horse.
Mm-hmm.
That's my answer. Okay. I'm sticking with it.
Okay. I'm backing you up on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that question, Ashley. And thank you for the somewhat ambiguous, but still enlightening answer, Aviva. I love
You're
it
welcome.
When you give people stuff that makes them have to think about it. Like, oh, that's a great answer. Now I have to think my way through.
Yeah.
I love that. So
thank you.
Well, we've got a really cool interview coming up with Merdad Bagai, who is the founder and head saddle maker of JRD Saddlery. He had some really cool things to tell us about differences in the insides of a saddle that I didn't personally know all of that. So it was great to get to ask him some questions about that and get his insights into how things should fit, things that riders can look for in their current saddle. And if you were looking for a saddle to purchase a new saddle, things that you might want to consider moving forward. So we're going to get to that interview in just a couple of moments. But first, here's a word from our sponsor. There's more talk than ever about the importance of probiotics in equine health, but not all probiotics are created equal. New Purina Systemic Supplement remains live and active after the pelleting process and throughout the digestive system, making it all the way to the hindgut. Systemic was designed to support normal recovery after exercise and occasional gastrointestinal stress. Whether you're using a probiotic now or not, it's time to use a live and active supplement from a name you trust. Visit mq.purinamills.com to try Purina Systemic Probiotic Supplement today. Today, we're really excited to be joined by Merdad Bagai, the saddle maker of JRD Saddlery, which is based in Sebastopol, California and Palm City, Florida. Merdad, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Stephanie. And hello, Aviva.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you guys.
It's great to have you here, Merdad. You know, Stephanie introduced you as a saddle maker. I hear a lot about saddle makers and saddle fitters. Is there a difference? And if there is, which one are you and what is the difference?
Yes, there is a very, there's a great difference between a saddle maker and a saddle fitter. Saddle maker is one who actually makes the saddle for you. So if you order a saddle, you give them the specifications, that saddle maker actually makes the saddle for you. A saddle fitter, which we have many in the U.S. these days, is one that has learned the trade by going to a class in, there are several saddle fitter classes in the country, and they start from a two-day course all the way to a two-week course. And they will come assess the fit of your saddle, and usually they carry a line. They sell a saddle for a company. Mm-hmm. Whatever that name is. But a saddle maker as I am, which I have been making JRD saddles, this May will be 30 years.
Wow.
That's amazing.
And I've been making it. And you can order it, choose the colors. You can come watch your saddle get made. Saddle fitters will sometimes will take an order and they will send it somewhere to Europe or India and they will ask them to make it. And that saddle maker has never seen you, has never seen your horse, just goes on what they're asking him to make. Mm-hmm. In many cases, they have pre-made saddles, which they will come with a big truck, have you try it, and then see what you like and you purchase.
What's the single most important thing to think about when you're buying a saddle? What makes a well-fitted saddle for the horse? What makes a well-fitted saddle for the rider?
You know, the most single most important thing for both is the performance. Performance for the horse, performance for the rider. A properly fitted saddle will enhance muscle building in your horse, and it will enhance the training for the rider. 30 years ago, 25 years ago, we used to make saddles. All we were concerned with was the horse isn't in pain, because most horses were in pain those days.
Right.
And today, that's a given. We just worry about what can I do to make that horse go better, muscle up better, and go up the ladder. And same thing for the rider.
So if it's that individual, is it possible to have one saddle fit more than one horse or more than one rider?
You know, it is a very difficult thing. I do make saddles for certain riders whom their trainer can also ride in it. Mm-hmm. But my question usually is the saddle made for you or for your trainer? We always ask, which one is your most important horse? So if they bring me two horses because they only want to buy one saddle, I will ask them which horse is more important. I will make that saddle to that horse. Now, if it happens that that horse is very wide in the shoulders, very wide in the back, then it would probably be okay. They can use the saddle that I make for that specific horse, and they can use certain padding to get along with the other horse. It will not fit the other horse very well, but it will not create pain for that horse. But really, in general, you should make in dressage, you should make a saddle for a horse and one rider.
Okay. And can that saddle generally travel with that horse throughout its career if it's made well?
Of course. You know, one of the important things is that you know that horse is going to change, that rider is going to change. I mean, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, the horses that we were measuring are nothing to what the horses are today. Breeding, training, and look at the horses that went to the Olympics 25 years ago versus the horses go to the Olympics today. So we have to, as a saddle maker, have to be able to adjust that saddle as the horse muscles up, as the horse grows up. Because you don't want to buy a saddle every 6 months.
So how often should you have your saddle checked? Should you have it checked every 6 months? Should you wait until you notice something?
If your horse is in full training and you don't have any kind of issues, injuries, or stall rests, I would say check it between 6 months to 1 year. And also depends on the age of the horse. So if I'm making a saddle for your horse who is 5 years old, then we'll probably change much quicker than a horse that's 10 or 12.
Oh.
So it's between 6 months to a year.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about the different kinds of flocking? I mean, we hear about wool-flocked saddles. We hear about foam. There are air panels. What are the benefits of the different kinds of flocking? Which ones are better? Which ones are not so good?
Well, the best really is soft wool. One with the wool is that it will mold to your horse's back. Excuse me, to your horse's back. Wool actually wicks the heat and the wetness off of your horse's back. Where foam, it actually does the opposite. Synthetic wool does the opposite. So foam or synthetic wool would be the worst thing for the horse's back. And a lot of times people buy a really nice saddle that's wool flocked and they'll put a synthetic saddle pad under it. And test has shown the Society of Master Saddlers in England did a testing and they realized how much nicer the wool is on the horse's back versus foam. And also the difference is flocking a average dressage saddle with that soft wool is quite costly, where putting the foam into that saddle will probably be only $10-$12. So some saddle makers choose to use the inferior flocking. Some saddle makers use the top-of-the-line flocking. But in general, wool is the best. As far as the air is concerned, look, when that company came around about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, introducing the air panels, we were the second company that picked it up. But if you look at a panel that has air pockets in it, you can, with your finger, push the panel and it'll go all the way in. But the real test is when the whole saddle is on the horse's back. Air is as hard as concrete.
Mm-hmm.
And also the problem with air is that if you fit a saddle in Florida at 85 degree weather, and then you go to Atlanta for a test, well, temperature changes, pressure changes, that saddle no longer fits as well. So putting air panels, and that is the most important part of it. Because when I used to go to shows, I had people come in all the time and asking, can you check my saddle? Yes, because they had the air placed and the panels adjusted when they were at 20 degrees less or more. So air is really the most inferior way of making the panels. Wool is the best and the most expensive. Foam is just a way to make the saddle less expensive.
You said that wool on the back was the best. Do you recommend a wool or a sheepskin saddle pad directly on the horse's back?
A sheepskin saddle pad actually is great on the horse's back because, see, you have to realize leather breathes, sheepskin breathes, wool breathes. So as long as you don't have synthetic between your horse's back and the saddle, that is preferable. So years ago, people came up with gel pads, and it was supposed to be fantastic. But when we would check the saddle, we realized the back is so wet and so hot, and versus a sheepskin pad. But you know, if your saddle fits well, you don't need that sheepskin pad. So that is probably one that people don't think about. And these days, a sheepskin pad is more of an aesthetic thing than it is for the comfort of the horse.
Yeah, because when you look at all the Olympic horses, they all have so many pads under their saddles. And I always wonder, is that because your saddle doesn't fit? That can't be right on an Olympic horse.
No, their saddles usually fit. And yeah. Even though the Olympic horses, their saddles fit. It's just an aesthetic thing.
Okay.
Mehrdad, talk to us about the differences in trees. You know, obviously we've all heard of wood trees. And I guess there's also, I don't know if they're acrylic or plastic trees. And then I know that there are certain saddles that come with no tree.
Yes. Well, a no tree saddle is really like having a bareback pad. No one has been able to come up with a treeless saddle that you can perform in. You can ride going on in the hills on a trail ride, or you can just walk around the ranch. But if you want to properly ride, a treeless saddle does not work. So let's go into the trees. Yes, some trees are wood. They're laminated wood, and they have spring steel or different kind of steel reinforcing it. And then you have plastic or synthetic trees. That some synthetic trees are rigid, like carbon fiber. That's a new popular tree that's carbon fiber. So one thing to remember is that your horse's back isn't perfectly flat and still. As the horse moves, so does the back. If you ride one horse and pony another one next to him, and look at the back, and you'll see how the trapezius moves, how much movement there is in the back. So we want to have a flexible tree. So as the horse moves, the tree flexes with the horse's back the proper way. So a rigid tree, which is most of the synthetic trees, really is not preferable in any case. As far as there are some synthetic trees that are flexible, but with a wood tree, when we measure a horse's back, we see where the curl on the horse's back is. So when you tickle your horse's belly, the back comes up. Mm-hmm. I want to put the rider's seat bones and the pubic bone on top of that curl. Now, if my tree doesn't flex right on top of that, with a wood tree, I can shave it and weaken it in that area and put the flex right on top of the horse's center of balance.
And then we can wrap it.
Exactly. That is a true custom saddle. So if I take a wood tree and I shave certain part of it, that the flex of that tree will be on top of the horse's center of balance, which should be basically under your seat bones and your pubic bone, then your horse truly feels your true weight. And then we use the spring steel or rawhide at times to give the strength back into the tree. With a synthetic tree, that is not possible. Synthetic trees break, some are rigid, and some that have flex, but you can't change that flex. And so a wood tree is the most expensive. An average wood tree costs you several hundred dollars, our cost, where a synthetic tree will cost us $30. Because with a synthetic tree, they can make mass produce thousands of it, where a laminated wood tree is done by hand and it takes a lot of work.
And the tree is what you build the saddle on, right? So when we talk about trees and we talk about a twist and we talk about, you know, the billets and all of those kinds of things, can you kind of define those terms for us as well?
The tree is the structure of your saddle. So there are three major components to the tree. In fact, I have a YouTube on this issue about the trees. First is the head of the tree, which goes right behind the shoulders of the horse. Then is the what we call the chassis of the tree, how flat that tree is, depending on how flat your horse's back is. Some mm-hmm. horses have more of a dip in the back. Some horses are sway back. Some horses are very flat. And then it's the what we call the waist of the tree. A tree is like a body of a person. So the waist being the narrowest part of that tree where you sit. And that also is called the twist. I don't know where that terminology came about, but we have used it for the last 30 years. But in the tree manufacturing industry, we call it the waist of the tree.
And can that be adjusted for the rider as well as the horse, or does the horse's conformation define how wide or thin that waist is?
For the most part, is the horse's conformation. So if the horse has extremely wide trapezius, which I see more and more of that these days, the trapezius of the horse is what enhances the movement of that horse. So I need to clear the rider's weight as much as possible from the trapezius of the horse. So if the tree sits hard on the trapezius and riders, and imagine most of your weight is in the stirrups. Mm-hmm. So if the stirrups are usually on top of the trapezius of the horse, not always, but similar in that region. So if I put all your weight on that, well, it will make it harder for the horse to move. Then the head of the tree, which is right behind the shoulders. So there are some trees that we call open head. So this front is like a funnel shape and it's open so the horse can move his shoulders back and forth.
Kind some of like trees, a U shape?
No, not like a U shape. Like the front is like a bell shape. The front is more open than the center. So,
oh, okay.
So imagine, see, because now we get into the points. Front of the tree, either side, where the stirrup bars are attached, what we call the points. Now they're different lengths depending on the horse's back. That needs to be away from the shoulders. Because when the horse moves the shoulders back, you don't want the hardware to stop it. It's okay to have leather and wool behind the shoulders, but the hardware of the tree you don't want behind the shoulders.
That makes sense.
Mm.
So as long as the head of the tree fits that horse's shoulders, for the most part, in my system, we have trees that start at 2 centimeters wider in the front at the shoulders, going all the way up to 5 centimeters. Now, if the shoulders are really large, then you go with a larger, more centimeters open head. But if the horse has very small shoulders and you put a tree on it that has a very wide front, well, it's going to sit on the wither. It's not going to perform that. It's going to actually pinch the horse. So the three components of the tree is the head of the tree, it's the waist, which you call the twist, and we call the chassis, which is the balance, which is the top line of the horse. Okay. So if your horse has a very flat back, which some horses do, then that chassis needs to be flat. See, in the old days, when 20 years ago, people started wanting deep seats, we didn't know any better. So we would bend the tree, put it in a vise that bends the tree, and we would build a saddle on it. That way, you're sitting in this U-shaped saddle. You have a deeper seat. Well, then you put that on a flat back horse. Now you have a rocking chair on the top of that horse.
Mm.
Is that where the idea, the word bridging comes in?
Exactly. When you do that, it's the opposite of bridging. So bridging is the term that's misused daily by so many people. And if you want me to explain what bridging is, imagine you put a 2x4 or 2x6 on top of your horse's back that has a dip in the middle of the back. You're going to notice there are 2 points in the front at the shoulder that the wood is sitting, and 2 points there by the lumbar that the wood is sitting, and the center is empty, just like a bridge.
Mm.
So if you have a horse that has somewhat of a sway back, not necessarily a sway back, a normal dip in the back, and which most horses around the 13th to 15th thoracic have a little bit of a dip. And if you have a tree that's really flat, well, you're going to have space under the seat. Now, most people don't check the bridging the proper way. Most of the saddle fitters that I see, they put the saddle on the horse's back, they girth it up at the cross tie, they put their hand under the middle of the saddle and say, well, see, it's bridging. Well, depending on the horse, if it's a Grand Prix horse, you need to tickle that belly and have that horse bring the back up, because you don't ride in the cross tie. So you need to check the fit of the saddle with the back up. So if it's a Grand Prix horse, it's going to bring the back up a lot more than it's a first level horse. So when you check for bridging, you need to have all that in front of you. Then also, when the rider sits in it, depending on the weight of the rider, if it's a flexible tree, the rider sits in that saddle, the saddle will flex a little bit. The center of the saddle on the rider's seat bones and pubic bone will have more contact with the horse's back.
Mm-hmm.
So when I check the saddle fit, I will have the rider sit in the saddle, no saddle pads. I will lift the belly up a little bit. Then I check how the saddle fits. Does the back pop up? Does the front pop up? Is most of the weight of the rider in the center? That's how you need to check it. You don't need to check the saddle when the rider is riding, because when you're riding, the back is up and down. But you want to check it with the optimum way of where the rider sits and where the horse's back is.
What about when you see a rider and the saddle seems as if it's going from side to side as the horse moves?
So that is usually, we have the center of the saddle where either side of the panel is, we call that the gullet.
Mm-hmm.
I know lately many saddle fitters are starting to call that the channel. But in the saddle making world, we call that the gullet.
Okay.
So if that's too wide for your horse's, width of your horse's spine, that saddle is going to go side to side.
Okay.
And you know, I hear all the time saying, no, my trainer says I need to have a very wide gullet channel. And I get that question all the time. How wide is the channel? I usually say it's as wide as your horse's back. Because we make it for that horse's back. So if it's too wide, the saddle is going to go side to side.
Okay.
If it's too narrow, the saddle will not sit into your horse's back properly. So it will bounce.
Mm.
If you go to the shows, you see that a rider is riding, back of the saddle is bouncing up and down and up and down. And that's usually the cause of the gullets not being right, or the cause of the balance of the chassis of the tree not being right.
And so then actually, the tree and the gullet and the points and the waist, I mean, everything that you're talking about is way more important than everything that all the leather and the flocking.
Exactly. Look, the leather and the flocking has nothing to do with it. Yes, even if you put foam flocking, it may not be great, but you can still, with the proper tree, you still won't have problems.
Right.
For a while, because after a while, the foam, because you cannot reflock a foam panel. So after a while, the foam will disintegrate and then it won't fit anymore. So you have to put new foam in, which is very difficult. It's a lot of work. But the tree is the most important part of that saddle. And the size of the tree for the rider, So if a writer comes to me and says that I want a very deep seat, a deep seat could be the back of the cantle can be higher or the pommel can be higher. Normally, the pommel of the tree has to do with how high the withers of the horses.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we make a custom saddle, we put the proper size pommel for that horse. And then if the rider wants a deep seat, or wants some people want to have a high back so they can lean against it, even though it's incorrect for the riding, but we make what people ask us. So we just put a higher cantle. But the center has to fit the rider and the horse. So how high the cantle is, how high the pommel is, has really nothing to do with the performance. It's the center that has to fit the rider's seat and has to fit the horse's back. So going back to twist, you take a petite rider and take a 2x8 piece of wood, lumber, have her sit on it. You will see her thighs will not drape perfectly on either side of that piece of lumber. And there will be a big gap between her pubic bone, seat bone, and that lumber. And she will not be able to get her legs around that horse. So the wider, if the twist is too wide for you, forget about the horse. The horse gets it, to his measurement. But if the twist is too wide for you, you will not be able to wrap your legs around the horse and drop the legs down. So if you put your lower legs on, your upper thighs come off the horse. If you put your thighs on, your lower legs come off the horse. So the twist is very important, not just for the horse, but for the rider.
I remember a long time ago, a lady I was riding for bought a dressage saddle, and we were all very excited about it. It was the first real dressage saddle I'd sat in. And I didn't know what I didn't know. And then sometime later, she had a saddle fitter come out. And I literally said, oh, I'm not supposed to feel like I have a 2x4 sticking into my thighs because the twist was too wide and I didn't know what I didn't know. So yes, I know exactly how that feels.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And also, and on the other side, if the twist is too narrow, it will be very uncomfortable for the rider. It's like sitting on a rail. So really making a dressage saddle, the measurements are so important. Whether you are training first level or Grand Prix, the saddle has to fit you and the rider for performance. And it's very simple to find out how big of a twist you need. Measure in front of you from point of ilium to the point of ilium in front. If you have that measurement, you can determine what kind of twist you like. In most cases, sometimes I have been wrong when I had a very petite rider who wanted an extremely wide twist. But in general, if you measure from the point of your ilium to the other, that can determine what kind of twist you need.
Do men need a different twist versus women? Is there a difference there?
Yes, there is a big difference. The women's pubic arch is a lot more flexible than men's. So women can have a wider twist than men do. But for the most part, and see, the women generally in a dressage saddle, you sit with your seat bones and touching your pubic bone to the front. You're sitting on three points. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, you're only sitting on your seat bones, then you're going to hit the front when you're riding and you'll be very uncomfortable. See, men, we sit differently. Men sit mostly on the seat bones. And men are usually have much stronger legs and they can manage the wider twist if they need to. But usually men need narrower twists than women.
Okay.
So now let's talk a little bit about the seat. And I know when I first started riding and it was, you know, you should be able to fit four fingers between, you know, where your butt is in the saddle and, you know, the end of the cantle. But now we have saddles that are particularly deep and we have other saddles that are flatter. And how do you know how to adjust a seat size for a rider? What is the correct fit?
You know, years ago, I was at the dressage convention in Portland. A very well-known trainer came up to me and said, how can you make a saddle for a rider if you don't know what their pelvis looks like? And I started thinking, wow, that is very true. So I said, what do you mean by this? She says, you need to measure from the point of their pubis to the ground and measure from their one of their seat bones to the ground. That difference is the curve of their pelvis. And believe it or not, I started thinking about that for days. So we started taking the same tool that we measured the horse's back with, trace the back. We started tracing the pelvis of the riders. As long as the seat balance is right for you, it doesn't matter how high the cantle is, how high the pommel is. As I said, you sit on three points. Mm-hmm. As long as the balance of the seat is correct, your legs hang comfortably under you, and you're not forced, and you don't need those massive outside blocks. And many of the riders, I just made a saddle for a rider that actually going quite far in her career. She has no blocks because she can ride and the seat is very flat. And she doesn't need those massive outside blocks. Granted, we make them because people ask us. But if the balance of the seat is right for you, and that's only done by measurement, the cantle, the pommel, none of that comes into picture. And the notion of how many fingers are behind you, how many fingers the saddle is above the horse's withers, those are what we talked about 25 years ago. None of that matters anymore. Because if you have a high cantle saddle, you have probably 7-8 fingers behind your seat. Mm-hmm. You're not sitting on the cantle. So seat balance is the most important thing for the rider and the horse, because you ride with your seat, so the horse has to feel your seat. If I build you a saddle, as I see all the time, of different saddles, where you're 8 inches off the horse's back, well, the horse can't feel you, and you can't really feel the horse. So where you sit, your balance is your distance between your two seat bones and your pubis. That triangle needs to be right for you, for the horse, and that saddle has to put you there. Some people like that part needs to be more forward, or some people needs to be further back. So as long as your seat balance is correct, then some people like to have more hip angle. That's okay. As Stephanie, you know, some of the trainers are recommending more of a closed hip angle. Mm-hmm. And some trainers are recommending very open hip angle, nearly standing up. But if your seat balance is correct, the rest of it is just flaps. You just make the flaps that fit that rider.
And how do you fit the flaps? Where should the bottom of the flap be on the rider's calf?
Well, basically, remember, you want your calves on the horse. Mm-hmm. And you, when you have your boots on, you want the bottom of the flaps to be 2-3 inches below the top of your boots. Now, if you have a beginner rider that the legs are moving a lot, maybe that needs to be a little different. But an average, properly fitted dressage saddle, your calves are on the horse and you feel the horse. And regardless of how close or how open your hip angle is, because imagine the hip angle is that it's a triangle from your ilium, from your hip bone to your knee down to your ankle. So that triangle can be very open or can be closed, depending on how your style of riding is.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe 2-3 inches, 2 inches, 3 inches below the top of the boot. Now, some people have older boots that are shorter. And if that's how they're going to ride, then you have to make the flaps a little longer for them.
And I'm thinking about what you were saying about the angle of the distance from the pubis to the two seat bones. That's not going to change if somebody gets heavier or loses weight, because the bones don't change. Does that change if somebody has a baby?
You know, because I have measured thousands of women and men mm-hmm. over the years, and when that very important rider asked me how I would know how to do a seat when I was in Portland, I started studying this. And if I measure the twist we called it, for a 16-year-old rider, girl, versus her mother, it will be quite different. So if they've had babies, the pubic arch will be more flexible. If they have not, it will be more closed. But the distance between the pubis to the seat bones, that triangle does not change. Maybe the distance between the seat bone to the other seat bone changes a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, and it has absolute, because we did this, we tested over 200 some odd riders. And I had trainers that would bring their clients into my shop in California. We would measure from their pubis to the seat bone to seat bone, figure out what the distance of that triangle is. And it has nothing to do with your height or weight. It is the bone structure you have. So the dressage saddles, and I have hundreds of measurements that when we tested, and we were trying to find a benchmark to come up with an off-the-rack saddle.
Mm-hmm.
And just was not possible because everybody is different. So that the balance of the seat and balance of the rider is the most important part.
Well, you've really given us a lot to think about.
Yes. And then going back to when I said with a wood tree, I can weaken certain part of the tree to put the flex in. But at the same time, with a flexible tree, wood tree, I can move your balance forward or further back. I can make your balance longer. I can make it shorter. I can put you in a wedge. I can put you in a flat spot. That's the difference with a wood tree and a plastic tree.
Interesting. Yeah, that is a lot it's a lot of individual pieces that go together. And when you talk about them all, it makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
But I don't know that it's something that the average person, you know, they look at the quality of the leather. They look at, is it pretty? They look at, does it fit pretty close? They don't necessarily think into the guts of the saddle, essentially.
No, average these days. When I started making saddles, of course, things were different. But these days, basically, the riders order a saddle that the trainer is sponsored by that company. So whether it, and they decide they want a 17-inch, 17.5-inch, deeper seat or flatter seat. That's really what happens. And by the true custom saddle that was made for you has all those points in consideration.
So I'm going to end this with a very funny story. I don't know if either one of you is a Star Trek fan, but in one of the Star Trek movies, Captain Picard and Captain Kirk were both riding. And Captain Picard was getting ready to leave the Enterprise. And as he was leaving, he was carrying a saddle. And his number one said to him, "You have your own saddle?" And his answer was, "Yes, a saddle is a very personal thing.
Yes.
And that's exactly what you've said, Merdad. A saddle very is true. A very personal thing.
Very true. Tomorrow, I'm fitting a saddle to a client of mine that I made for her 15 years ago. And I'm changing it to her third horse.
Wow.
That saddle fits that's her amazing. Beautifully.
Yep.
And I'm changing it to, and if a saddle is made for you properly, you don't need to buy a new one when you get a new horse. You can.
Don't tell the husbands that.
but
you know the thing is though that riders change and evolve in their riding as well. So where they were sitting when they were first level riders is not always the same as where they're sitting as fourth level riders.
We can change all that in their saddle. I can move their balance. I can change their balance. And believe it or not, sometimes they're asking me to put more bling on the saddle.
Oh, of course.
If you see all the designs we put in the back of the Canto, you would be shocked.
No, I would not.
You know, 20, Aviva does 20...
Aviva judges. So
oh, you do.
Yeah, I see a lot of things in the ring these days. Let me tell you, between the colors and the helmets and the coats and the bling on the saddles and the boots. Yeah.
25 years ago, I made a red saddle where the back of the cantle was red, the pommel was red, and some gator print on it. And I took it to LAEC, LA Equestrian Center, at the dressage show. This was 25 years ago. So many people walked by and said, "You are cheapening our sport."
And the other day, I saw a pink saddle on Facebook.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for spending time with us. This is, you know, I knew that saddles were complicated. They're even more complicated, I think, than I realized, but you've given me a lot of things to think about, and I really appreciate your taking the time to educate us peons.
Yes. No, it is thank a pleasure. You. And you know, it's ever changing.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure.